Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
With Rod Oram, who's in Egypt, which is where COP27 is happening at the moment. Kia ora, Rod. How are you?
Marina, Rachel, very well, thank you.
Nice to chat with you. Before we get stuck into COP, let's get the US midterms out of the way because it's all kicked off overnight. What's actually happening at the moment? People were predicting a big red wave. Is that what we're seeing come through?
No, it's barely a red ripple, but we won't know the full result for probably another week. Mm-hmm. But to give you an idea of how much different this is than other midterm elections, normally the incumbent party loses about 40, 50 or 60 seats in the House. And that was the sort of loss that even Donald Trump lost in 40 and Obama about 50. But in fact, at the moment, the Democrats have lost two seats in the House, and the Republicans have only won two.
Wow.
So even the House is fairly is on a knife edge. However, the Republicans only need to get five seats to be able to they only need a relatively few seats,
right,
to be able to get the majority, and there's quite a big pool of what are known as competitive seats, i.e. they could go either way. So I think the feeling is still it will be a Republican-led House, but not entirely clear. But the Senate's the interesting thing because the Republicans have lost a seat in the Senate, and that was in Pennsylvania, where a Trump candidate, Oz, Mehmet Oz, was a really weird character, certainly turned off all the Republicans, a fair few of the Republicans. And so a Democrat, a lieutenant governor who had suffered a horrible stroke and in a recent campaign debate seemed to be all over the place, was really struggling with his speech. He won. And
wow.
So there's a real chance of the Democrats holding on to control in the Senate.
Now, this has been a really...
That would still make life very...
Oh, sorry,
sorry,
Rod.
You. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say this has been a really tense one to watch from an afar sort of position because, I mean, it feels like the stakes are especially high. Maybe that's the public sentiment or maybe that is perhaps true. But do you think that's, I mean, is that a fair assumption that the stakes are quite high for this particular midterm or do midterms always kind of feel this tense?
They are very tense, and what I've just discussed doesn't clarify that. In fact, in many ways, it just entrenches the deep chasm in politics in the United States. So, for example, about 140 Republicans so far have been elected to offices identified as climate deniers. Election deniers. I'm sorry, I'm COP. I think of climate all the time. Election deniers.
Yep.
And that's actually more Republicans than voted a tally of the electoral votes.
Oh, we might have just lost Rod.
There's been a real push. Further downstream, there's been a real push to get secretaries of state in individual states who are key electoral officials to get electoral deniers into those roles. But local state electors have been very smart about that. And that sort of person has done very badly. So there are some signs that there is a pushback against the extreme election denier Trumpian view of the world. But having said that, the person who won really big last night was Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, who won by 20 percentage points. And he didn't just take rural Florida, which is pretty Republican, but he also took Democrat heartlands down in Miami as well, and picked up quite a few more Hispanic votes as well. And he's just as extreme as Trump, but in many ways he would be more electable than Trump because he's got more discipline of all kinds of levels is more articulate than Trump. So this has now set up this amazing fight between DeSantis and Trump. They went head to head in Miami last Saturday night by both holding rallies, which really annoyed Trump. Trump has been remarkably quiet today. He basically said, when he was trying to hold a party at Mar-a-Lago, that it's going to be interesting to watch. He had very little to say publicly. Mm. And then very soon after, the area was in a forced evacuation zone because a tropical storm heading their way.
Oh,
so not looking good for Trump. And in fact, that Pennsylvania loss was a really important one for Trump, because Oz was a key candidate that Trump had been pushing.
Mm.
And overall, there have been some exceptions, but overall, the very poor quality of the candidates he was pushing, the electorate, electors saw straight through that. Strong ones that, such as in Nevada, did get through, but those were more credible candidates backed by Trump than Trump was backing elsewhere.
It's going to be fascinating to watch how this plays out in a tense couple of weeks while we wait for those results to come through. Let's turn to COP27, though. That's where you are in Egypt at the moment. There's been some really significant stuff come through this week, particularly actually for New Zealand's involvement, and this is around loss and damages. Can you explain what New Zealand signed up to and what does it actually signify?
We were the second country after Denmark and Scotland to offer money to developing countries. I much prefer to call them the Global South, because for their claims that they need an awful lot of financial help for the damage caused by climate change, which has been largely caused by the global north, but also for the economic losses caused by that and into the future. This is a huge breakthrough. First of all, the Global South pushed very, very hard. It took 40 hours of negotiations before COP started to get this on the agenda for the first time ever.
Wow.
In 27 COPs. There was a bit of a patch up back at 2015 in Paris. There was this pot of money. It was a number plucked out of the air late at night. There'd be $100 billion a year from developing countries, the global north, to help the global south. But the global north never coughed that up. They've only got up to $83 billion, and not much of that money is flowing. So this whole process of how the global north helps the global south develop, but also deal with the very real impacts of climate that are hitting them very hard now, is really fundamental to this COP. And I think it has much bigger implications than that, because if we could get a real movement on this, it would also show that it's possible to mobilize capital in different ways, because that's particularly private sector capital, into climate, into the global south. And so whilst we're still living with a seriously deficient plans by countries, commitments by countries to reduce their emissions, if we see progress of this kind, I hope it would then embolden countries to lift their ambitions.
Absolutely.
So I don't think we're going to get back to 1.5 degrees, but we've got to stick as close as we can possibly to it.
Totally.
That's why I think this is absolutely the key, huge and multifaceted issue to keep an eye on through the rest of this week and all the way through next week too, as COP runs on.
And before we run out of time, I did want to get your thoughts on what NGOs are up to at the moment, because they've been playing a particular role in this COP that we're seeing this year. What's your observations around this?
This is very early days, and I've been trying it out on some people today, and they've gone away to think about it, people in the NGOs. Look, the NGOs have always been really important about keeping the feet to the fire, both on one hand of government and international agencies, but also businesses as well. But my impression is that the NGOs are even more articulate, more effective than they've been in the past. They've just really got clarity and a zeal of purpose and good sense. And I think that's terribly important, because I think that's to stimulate civil society in that way, so that voters then are pushing government and business to do more, to me, is the flow that needs to happen here. That's why the NGOs are so important. And I would, I mean, I could point to hundreds of them, but there is a big overall group called the Climate Action Network internationally. We have a very strong branch of it in New Zealand, where many of our NGOs are members of CAN-NZ. These are the wonderful people internationally that bring you the Fossil of the Day Award, which this today went to Japan, because the government's spending about $11 billion a year funding fossil fuel development still. Anyway, that's a side point. It's a kind of a fun thing every day, the fossil of the year, of the day. A serious fun though. So I'm particularly watching the NGOs this time. They're just so many hugely talented young people who haven't given up.
Yeah.
Who haven't given up and, you know, are very smart, very intelligent, and are very good at working with people to make stuff happen. So that's why, as I say, Global South and NGOs, two big things for me.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us, Rod Oram, all the way over in Egypt, where COP27 is happening at the moment. We'll be very interested to hear more from you on the other side of this as well, but best of luck for the rest of your time over there.
Well, thank you. And it'd be a great fun to catch up with you soon after my return home.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.